thank you for having me today. It's lovely to talk to you.
Kirsten, tell me now, so what is the background? Why Indigenous people, why are they wary to look at or to hear this type of information?
Okay, so in a lot of communities, traditionally, when someone passes away, their name isn't mentioned again. Or there'll be a particular name, a cultural name that is used with respect to that person. After a certain period, people can actually use that name. So there's a whole stages of, of grieving and mourning. And for some families, when they're watching television, it can cause trauma. If they hear a voice of a family member or see an image without there being any warning. So it's just good to have that protocol in place around a respect around people's passing away, because I guess the balance is because of that old world and having to navigate through Western society around media, to have those warnings just prepares people that they may see someone, a loved one or a family member or someone they know.
What about family photographs? How common is that for Indigenous people to keep photographs of deceased people in their, let's say, family albums or at the moment, probably maybe on the computers?
Yes, yeah, so that's fairly normal. People will have, you know, most families will have a photo of a loved one. It just depends. Every family is different. It is like a case-by-case story, and some groups or family groups will not have any photos up. It just depends on the culture of the family. Obviously, you know, a lot of people will have photos around, and then some people won't. Like some people, once they're buried, they're buried, and that's it.
When they're buried, they're buried. But, you know, if you compare it, let's say Christians believe in heaven or hell, or what are the Indigenous analogues of that, if any?
Yeah, no, there is a lot, and it just depends on certain family groups. Generally, a lot of families that I have learnt from along the way, they will say that the family's spirit is released through the ceremony, and that's why they don't mention the person's name again. To invoke the spirit of that person, but also they want to send people off to continue their journey. When they talk about the dreaming, it's the next stage of your journey. And that's this where we are now in this space is just part of our journey, and we've still got a long way to go. So,
what about reincarnation?
Well, some families will say, and something that I've been taught through my own culture is that people may come back as a spirit or come back as an animal, or you might see something, you might see a sign from something. And even from my training in Hawaiian culture, they will call an akuamana is a totem that's come back from the spirit world, that's actually a family member, an ancestor.
Not so much different from general beliefs of the humankind, is it?
Yeah, well, everyone has their own story, but it just depends. Like, I could speak for myself, you know, I get signs from certain birds, or people will come back, you know, you get a message around something. It's usually a bird for me. A bird will appear and give you a call, or you might get a warning that something's going to happen. But every family is different, so I can't speak. But I have been sort of taught from lots of different families, and within my own culture, my understanding is that we are on a continuous journey.
What other taboos and sensitivities we have to keep in mind, let's say us as journalists, when we are reporting or covering certain Indigenous issues, whether it is on the radio or on television or in print even?
Yeah, so there's a lot to navigate around, and even just making some initial steps. So if someone's passed away, generally there would be some form of permission to be sought around having their name released and having photographs. And if, say, someone's passed away from a death in custody, which is sadly quite common within our communities, there would be a spokesperson who could speak on behalf of the family that's been assigned from the family. So a great way is, you know, when a family says we don't want our family member's image up on Facebook or up on a newspaper, then it's really good for journalists to actually respect that. You can go through your newsroom, you can go through NITV to try and find the right way to go about it if people are in contact with family members. But it's really good to try and respect the protocols, especially around death. First of all, you don't want to upset people. And second of all, you can also have a court case against you. So you have to be really careful. And again, there's this old culture that's there, these old laws, and it's having to navigate in a Western way with media. And that's why the protocols are in place when it comes to permissions.
When we're talking about Indigenous historical figures who have passed away, let's say Eddie Mabo, Right, who was a very important, and let's say his images in encyclopedias and books. How would his family members react to that?
Yeah, it is tricky, and it's interesting because that's come up recently, in the 20 years since the Mabo High Case, Court decision is coming up in June, July this year. So say if you're at SBS, you could actually go through Resource Centre, because there will be images that have been released that, by the family, permissions from the family, or through, you can contact NITV and see what permissions have been given. It's always good to check. Some of those images have been released for public, but if you're a reporter or working even in community radio, it's always good to have a talk to your editor and just check out the protocols that are, and any ethics that are within your organisation, because then you can actually start that journey. It is a bit of a journey. Sometimes you might not feel like you get anywhere. Sometimes you will have to go around certain things to make sure that you do the right thing.
How common are the court cases against people who have, let's say, made mistakes of that kind?
I know of a few, and they take a long time, and it's quite distressing for the families.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, you know, if I was a journalist, I wouldn't like to be in that situation. Mm. You know, this biggest case that we could, Karaburra Muska, where there's a funeral of 8 children from the Torres Strait Islands.
That.
One of the newspapers up in Queensland were publishing the kids' photos and their names when they were asked not to. That's an example of what not to do. I mean, you wouldn't really want to be going through a court case from offending, sending someone through a funeral, you know, because you wanted to get a top story. I mean,
sure.
It's not about getting the top story sometimes. It's actually about doing the right thing, even though we are in an industry where it's about making a scoop. But when it comes to protocols and ethics, you know, we have to have a line of respect.
Not just, I think, in Indigenous issues, but I would say across the board as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I was to do a story on something that was happening in your community, it would be best for me to
go straight to you first,
because you've got more knowledge within the organisation and what would be the best way to go about it. And that's where we can make some changes in the media landscape that we're in. We've got to talk to each other and connect properly and understand that different community groups have their own way of doing things.
Thanks a lot. That was very interesting. And I trust that people from the Russian community now, when they see disclaimers or words like that, they will be more aware of what it's all about.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and hello to all your audience out there. Thank you.